Mike Norvell put the clamps on camp. We got coach interviews to react to. Basketball just finished up the regular season, and baseball is in full swing, getting ready to start conference play next week. What's up, No Nation? I'm Jesse. That's Michael. We are the guys from Plant the Spear. And Michael, we got a full episode to talk about. We got multiple sports. Spring camp is starting right now. As you watching this, spring camp will be underway, but we won't be watching it because it has been locked down. So we got a lot to talk about today. Going to be a fully loaded episode for you guys. And Michael, before we jump into this, how are you, my friend? And it's good to be back on the mic talking about FSU again.
Oh, it's good to be back. You know, we took a little bit of time away because, you know, the news was a little just not happening. And now finding out what spring practice is going to be like, we got some stuff to talk about, get off our chests, so to speak.
Yeah, and we might not find a whole lot out, right? Because it is, you know, we actually talked about this in the last episode when we had our five questions for spring camp. One of the first questions that we asked before we could ask every other question is camp going to be open or not? Because every question that you have might not get answered if camp is closed. And one of the things that I talked about in that episode was it's easy to keep something away once it's already been hidden. And I think that's kind of what Mike Norvell's doing. It's like, listen, I'm not going to make some drastic change. The policy is already what it is. It's been closed. And so we're just going to keep it that way. And it turns out that it's actually even less access than it was last year. Yep. Media is getting very limited two sessions throughout the whole 15 practices, where they'll have a limited amount of time to take some pictures and videos. So we don't know if those are going to be even the scrimmages or anything like that. So it's going to be very tight-lipped, a lot of information kept under wraps. I'm sure, you know, the beats and stuff like that, they'll have their insiders and their sources and stuff where news will get leaked. But, you know, again, man, they're keeping this thing under wraps this year. No spring game for the fans and stuff like that. And we're going to talk about that. And I understand that to maybe why they do or why they don't. But, you know, when we jump right in and talk about this part of it first, before we talk about the coach interviews, you know, I have mixed reviews on this part, right, where you close down the camp. I think I feel bad for some of the people that, you know, cover the team and this is their job and they rely on that access and everything. But, hey, you know, like we were saying before the show, welcome to our world. Like, I wish that they would open some things up for the fan reasons that we'll get into in a second. But I can't sit here and like, cry over access that we never had, right? People will talk about, oh, you're just upset, you know, that maybe they're not giving the media access. The last practice that I went to in Tallahassee, Bobby Bowden was the head coach. So it's again, like we don't have access to be taken away. So this changes nothing for us. But again, you kind of do have to rely on the things that come out of camp to know how this feels. And I think from, you know, not from a media perspective, because it does make our job a little bit tougher, right, to find things to talk about. But again, we've been doing this for years. I think the hard part from a fan's perspective, which is what we're trying to bring here, is that right now, where's your hope? And I think that's the biggest thing when you talk about maybe you don't need to open this thing up like it used to be to where you get to watch everything. But where's the giving us tidbits of information, letting the media be able to watch those scrimmages to be able to report back to the fan base?
Exactly.
Maybe watching some drills and things like that on tape that come out from camp. Because, you know, if you're really a fanatic and you're ingrained in all this stuff, you probably got a good idea of where things are. But, you know, if you're just kind of like a casual fan where you come back for the season and you kind of check in, see how things go, you know, where do you – like, what is your – mental picture of Florida State going into this 2026 season, as they're calling you, asking you to renew your booster donation, as they're calling you to renew your season tickets? You go, well, okay, well, we've won 7 games and lost 17 in the last 2 years. What gives me hope for me to want to come back to that New Mexico State game in late August and sweat my butt off in Doak Campbell Stadium? Well, we got Deuce. I know that's good. I think we got some running backs that I like, but I know we lost our whole offensive line. I know we got Auburn's third string quarterback. You know, the defense, I know we probably paid up to keep those guys they call the twins, but I don't really know much else about this defense. And so it's just from a fan perspective, I have mixed feelings about it, because on the one hand, I don't really care about the microphone access from a perspective of, we talked about last show, I don't care what you say to a microphone. I care what you do on Saturdays. That's all that matters. I don't care about the elite level of confidence. I don't care about any of those things until it leads to results on Saturdays. But what I do care about is being able to see some of these guys in action to know with my own two eyes whether I should have a reason to have hope for the next season. Because I think you said it very well, and I'll throw it back to you on this, but I think you said it very well on our last episode. where if you don't fill in the narrative, people will fill it in for you. And right now, that story has not been written kindly in Florida State's favor. So again, if you kind of, it's just, it creates disengagement among the fan base. Like I've seen people talk about this on social media over the last week since the news came out about no spring game and all that stuff. There's people who are like, has there ever been a time where you just kind of didn't care? Like now, you know what I mean? Where you're just like, okay, well, when game one gets here, we'll check back in and we'll see how it's going. And I think that's kind of what this fosters, that environment too. Like it just doesn't create any excitement for the upcoming season. And, you know, some of the reasons that they gave with the, well, you'd have to hold things back for the spring game for one practice. Like one practice is really going to make that big of a difference. You know, we'll see, man. But it didn't really work last year, keeping it locked down. It doesn't really give your fan base a whole lot to cling to, even though you know that donations are down right now. But man, it's the decision that they made. It doesn't really change anything for us. We're still going to do what we do. But I think from a fan's perspective, it would have been nice, maybe not to be wide open, but to be able to give us a little bit more access to this program, to make us know these players' stories better. You know what I mean? At a time when they want you to help invest in getting this program back where it needs to be.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. It's like you said, you know, we talked about last week that, you know, when the story has gaps, people will fill it in with their own narrative. They'll fill it in with whatever they believe, whatever, you know, false source they've read on Twitter. They'll fill it in with these false narratives that may or may not be true. But because you're not out there, Mike Norvell, you're not out there, John Garrett, you're not out there, you know, Michael Alford, actually allowing real reporting to go on in these practices, that's what you're going to get. Now, here's the thing. We all know that this team over the last 2 years has been absolutely downright atrocious. Like you said, 7-17 in the last 2 years ain't cutting it at Florida State. Honestly, you know, that's beyond firing territory right there. And so what I would say is, you know, the old saying, Jesse, is a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, right? Why can't Florida State just give the fans a spoonful of sugar? That's all they need.
Because they've been giving us a bucket full of
they've been giving a bucket full of some dirty medicine. It's not even medicine. I
can't say
better.
The word on it. We're a family friendly podcast. I can't say that. It ain't been a spoonful of sugar. It's been a bucket full of shoot.
Exactly. And so you think about it like, you know, okay, so you're not going to have the spring game because you say you have to hold back whatever practices. You're afraid of blind transferring.
Which there is no spring transfer session anyway. No, so where are they going? Session.
So what they're afraid of is the blind transfer, where a kid will come, you know, be a part of your spring season, and then after the spring season, somebody sees a game and says, "Hey, I know there ain't no spring transfer session, but I'll offer you $500,000 more than what you're making there to come here." So then they withdraw because the NCAA can't keep them from transferring schools.
Yeah,
right.
They're trying, but it hasn't passed yet.
Yeah. Right, but it hasn't passed yet. So they could just get at Miami's done this twice now, yeah. Right? With Duke and Wisconsin. So that's what they're afraid of. And I could make an argument against it. I can make an argument for it. But you got to give the fan base a spoonful of sugar. What about doing a fan day, Jesse?
Yeah.
What about not taking away any of the practices, but what about having a fan day where fans can get out on Doak Campbell Stadium field, right, on Bobby Bowden Field, and participate in fun drills with the players, you know, not crazy drills. Don't make us do, you know, mat drills, but, you know, participate in drills and get autographs with the players and have food, and the concession stands are open, and do some really cool things and charge us.
Right.
I know we would pay for – I would pay for that. Right.
Even if it's $20, like you're going to make something. They used to charge for spring games, I think, like $10 or something like that.
Yeah. And so all I'm saying is do something that's going to create a little bit of a sugar while we down this terrible medicine that has been Florida State the last 2 years. But again, this is where, and I don't mean to, I'm not trying to be, we're not a negative fan site here. We're not a negative media site here, but it's just the truth of the matter is that this is where, again, over the last several years, this administration has not really had the forethought to think through things like that. Hey, we're not going to have a spring. We're coming off a really bad season. What can we do to help our fan engagement? Because like you've said this, we've heard it. Donations are down. Interest in the program is down. I know we're going to talk about some of those donation issues later on in the show. Like, you got to give us a spoonful of sugar so that we can take this bad medicine with it.
Yeah. And I mean, when you talk about medicine, you know, they say winning cures everything. So if you were going 13-0 every year or 15-16-0 or competing for the playoffs in the ACC and you said, look, it just means you're not going to be able to watch spring. Nobody's going to care.
Great.
Right. Exactly. I don't care what you're doing behind wrap. Matter of fact, lock it down so we don't know. So in case it's illegal. But at the same time, when you're not winning, it just the problem is, like we said, man, this sport is so much different than a lot of other sports because of the emotional investment that you make in it, because of the financial investment that you have to make in it at the college level. And so, you know, again, it's not us coming on here complaining that we don't have media access. We don't have media access anyway. We aren't credentialed. We've worked that door handle every which way we could, and they won't let us inside. So it makes no difference for us. But at the end of the day, I just think it stinks for fans because, like you said, man, even a fan day or something just to help you feel more connected with this team might foster some excitement for the season, some donation excitement and things like that. But, you know, it is what it is, man. That's what they've decided to do. It's just one of those moves where it feels like you can feel the walls closing in. And so you just kind of keep everything out. And so we'll have to see. I mean, again, I was all for it last year and it didn't really make a difference. So I guess we'll just kind of see how it goes. Anyway, but we'll get on to the coaching interviews and see what we can take from that. But before we do that, I want to bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, these guys have great FSU gear for all the sports, basketball, baseball, softball, you name it, they got it. Check them out in Tallahassee at 1415 Timber Lane Road, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. Make sure that you save 10% with code SPEAR. You can use that code online or in store. They'll get you hooked up. So make sure you check those guys out, man. They got a ton of great stuff and definitely always my first stop in Tallahassee. So we appreciate you guys supporting those who support us and for Alumni Hall for rocking with us for all these years. So, Michael, let's talk about these coaching interviews. Now, as you know, as well as most of FSU Noel Nation knows, there's not a whole lot you can get out of a Mike Norvell press conference, right? He talks a lot, but says very little. And I think there was a lot of that in this introductory press conference. Now, there were some kind of big picture takeaways that you could read between the lines, which is what we're going to focus on today. But I think the first thing that I want to talk about is just his overall vibe, right? Because he didn't come out, and we joked about this on the last episode, where maybe you don't come out with the Southern Baptist preacher vibe that you had before, where it's just, oh, we're going to get it fixed, and we're going to do all this, and we're going to climb, and I have elite confidence and all this stuff, and the stuff that everyone's kind of like, okay, enough, we've heard enough, right? Like, let's yell after we win. I think it was nice to see him take a little bit more subdued approach and just kind of get through it. I mean, he always looks uncomfortable at press conferences, right? He always looks like, why do I have to be here? But there were a few things that we're going to talk about that I took away from the conversation, but I do think I like how his mood was. It wasn't so over the top because, again, like we've talked about in the last episode and this one, people just aren't buying that right now, right? No one cares about what you have to say in a microphone. People only have to say, care about what the scoreboard says on Saturdays or Fridays or Mondays, all these non-Saturday games we have. So I do think there's that, right? I appreciated that he's maybe finally learning to not set ridiculous expectations for himself at the microphone. So overall, I think the vibe was okay. And then we'll get in, give me some thoughts on that. And then we'll get into some overall takeaways.
Yeah. You know, I totally agree with you. I was so hoping that he wasn't coming out and be Southern Baptist Mike that, you know, last year we were at ACC Media Days and I asked him a question and
you kicked a beehive.
I kicked a beehive. And he stared a hole right through me, you know? And I was grateful that he came out. He just answered the questions. And, you know, like you said, you know, that's really what we got, most of it. And he didn't give us a lot like he usually doesn't. He repeats himself. He stumbled over, you know, some of the ways he was trying to answer. You know, he basically talked in a lot of circles. Now, there were a few things we were able to pull out that I think were important, which we're going to bring up here in just a second. But, yeah, I just thought it was more subdued, kind of like a man who knows his fate. I kind of got that vibe, kind of like, you know, well, this is what I can only be me. So we're just going to see what happens. And then, I may or may not be here next year.
Right. Yeah. So let's get into the big takeaways that we got from these interviews. And most of it's going to be a lot from Mike Norvell. And I think the first thing that really stood out to me, and this is something we've been talking about for the last couple episodes, where he went on the ACC network and kind of made some comments, and just the way that things were brought about with him, with Ashton Daniels coming in and things like that, is this is not a real quarterback competition. Not at all. The way he talked about it, and like we had seen the tea leaves, and you were kind of like, okay, I think there might be some smoke to this. This press conference was kind of like your dad saying something that without saying something, you know what yep. I mean? Where it was kind of like, no. This is, we're excited about yeah. both of them and yeah. what they can be. But the conversation was totally different between the two. This yes. one's, he's got the experience. He was brought in. He's shown this. He's done this. The other is like, he's getting better. He's got a yeah. year of experience. Yeah. You know, hey, he's going to be a guy in the future for us. And that was my first big takeaway. Now, he couched that with the best man will play at every position. But I don't know how much I believe that. I'm not buying that. So to me, the first real big takeaway was this is Ashton Daniels' job to lose. This is not a true quarterback competition, which is disappointing. Now, I will say, I think if, let's just say Kevin Sperry has an amazing spring and is just the guy, like he takes a massive step in year two, I do think he could play, right? I think if it's a sizable gap, he'll play. But I think for New Mexico State, you're going to see Ashton Daniels march out there as your starter. And I figured, you know, with what they're paying him, with the guy coming in with 37 Power 4 starts and all this stuff, that's pretty much what I thought was going to happen anyway. But I know a lot of us had thought, like, it's exciting to finally have a true quarterback competition. And then obviously you have Malachi Marshall coming in, who isn't going to be here till the summer. But now it seems to be more, this is Ashton Daniels' job to lose, and Kevin Sperry and Malachi Marshall are going to be competing for quarterback two. So it's a lot of what we built on with the question that we had on the last show, where it was like, do you have a quarterback battle where the quarterback two, whoever that may be, is at least good enough to step up and take the job from the QB one if he's not performing, whoever that may be. And so right now, it definitely feels like it's going to be Ashton Daniels' job to lose. But it's not a surprise. You could pretty much read into that. But I think that was my one real, real big, most obvious takeaway out of Mike Norvell's press conferences. Man, we don't quite have the competition that we thought we did at the quarterback position.
Yeah, it is disappointing. And the reason it's disappointing is not because we didn't know that was a possibility. Like you said, there had been tea leaves, had been smoke. We'd seen on social media a lot of people speculating that this is not going to be a real competition. They got Ashton Daniels. That's their guy. It's more so disappointing because you would have thought that based on what has happened with the last two portal quarterbacks, that Mike Norvell would go into the season saying, yes, we spent money on a portal quarterback again for the third season, for sure. And, you know, like I was telling you pre-show, like, you know, there's a lot of rumors out there that he's not making the same that DJU and Tommy Castellanos made, that he's significantly less. So regardless, you spent money. But you would have thought that, hey, we spent this money, we went cheap, we decided not to go spend $2 million on a quarterback like we told everyone we were going to, yep. because we felt like we needed to spend money elsewhere, and we wanted to have a true quarterback competition. So that's what's disappointing about this. But then when Mike Norvell said, and I watched that press conference, when you could tell the difference between the way he talked about both quarterbacks. He said it's going to be the best man's going to play, but then he says, we have big, and I quote, we have big expectations for Ashton Daniels. Well, that ended all conversations of a quarterback competition right then and there. Because then he followed up with, yeah, you know, Kevin's coming on, and, you know, he's going to have a tremendous career. He's got to keep growing. Oh, yeah. That yep. sounds like a guy who's already determined that Ashton is his starting quarterback. And so, you know what? Hey, if that's going to be your ride or die, you either going to ride him into another season, or you're going to ride him right on out of Florida State. It's up to you.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right with that. Like, you made the decision. And again, it's not a surprise, again, because you bring in a guy that has that much experience. You know he's going to start. It's just a disappointment because eventually you want to see one of these high school guys pan out. You want to see one of the homegrown guys pan out. And so, I mean, obviously you would hope next year that maybe him or Malachi Marshall, if, you know, pending whoever's here, is going to be available to be the starter. But yeah, that's not a surprise. Now, that actually brings me to one of the other big takeaways that I got here. And that is that, you know, Michael, I think Florida State might not be as good off NIL-wise as we might think we are. Now, that doesn't mean, hear me say this, that doesn't mean we're broke or quote-unquote or anything like that, right? Florida State obviously is spending money to compete in a lot of different areas. And there's a conversation, too, where you could go back and say, all right, well, what about Stanford? You know, you're spending more than Stanford. You should be able to beat them. Yes, that's true. So, obviously, spending more or less doesn't necessarily mean you qualify to win that game, right? Because you beat Alabama, who you don't spend as much. You lost to Stanford, who you do spend as much. So, there are other issues aside from NIL. But when you hear them talk about the conversation with John Garrett, which was a kind of a revealing interview when you watched it, about how they talked about, and to your point where you said their rumor was they were going to spend $2 to $2.5 million on a quarterback this year. That's why they had Calandria and they had Lagway on campus and all this stuff. And, you know, they said that a lot of this stuff, the allotment per position is predetermined. Like, they know what they're going to spend based on what they have to spend across the roster. And they said, like, we had the conversation. Do you think that we need to get into the expensive quarterback waters? And they all collectively decided, no, they don't need to do that. And the thing is, there are definitely levels of expensive that I kind of think of when you when you're looking at this. Like, we know DJU and Tommy made about $800,000 or $900,000.
Right.
That's what's been reported. I don't know what Ashton Daniels makes, but to your point, if it's less, it's probably less than $1 million.
Yep.
The difference of that to Mensah making $10 million at Miami, there's levels in between that, right? Yeah. And so I think the thing is, yeah, you need to spend money on the entire roster, right? You need to be able to fill out, because to John Garrett's point, like, everyone talks about getting stars, but you got to have guys to fill out a roster. You got to have depth. And I understand that you can't just all bury all your money into stars. But then again, you kind of look at the Miami method. They put most of their money into stars and it's worked out for them. And so when you look at what you did the last couple of years with the quarterback position, where you didn't feel the need to spend, and look at the results that you got from that. So then you come back this year and again agree that, no, we don't really need to spend. And then you look at the position that you may be in at the end of the year again if the quarterback position doesn't work out. So I think it's something that was a little bit of a red flag to me to know that, you know, not only are we not going to spend up to, like, I don't expect us to spend money we don't have, right? We don't have a billionaire booster, Spanx lady. We don't have a billionaire booster giving money to go spend $10 million on a quarterback. But I think at the end of the day, again, back to the beginning of what I was talking about, where, yes, you should be beating teams you spend more than, and you should, you know, you're, when you're beating teams that you spend less than. But it's kind of hard as Florida State fans. This is the conversation you got to have in the modern era of college football, and sometimes it's a hard conversation to have, is can you expect Miami, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama results from a program that's not giving the same resources, which is what it takes to win in college football nowadays. That's not, Duke was paying Mensah $4 million for a quarterback. We're not even paying $1 million. And so I think, and that doesn't mean that they're not spending a lot of money on the Twins and these other places, but look at the roster that you put together.
Yeah.
It's one of the worst rosters that he's had 7 years into the tenure. So if you are spending, if you're skimping on quarterback to spend it everywhere else, where is everywhere else?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where is the dominant guys on the rest of the roster? And so I think, and to go back to one last thing before I throw it back to you, is remember when they introduced John Garrett and there was a lot of to-do about the introductory press conference where they talked about how you have to spend money on quarterbacks nowadays. And Mike Norvell kind of had a reaction to that with poor body language. He kind of rolled his eyes a little bit, like he didn't like the situation that maybe he was put in. And so this is not giving Mike Norvell a pass in any way, shape, or form. But I think the realization is coming to the fact that Florida State spends competitively, but competitively to who is the question we have to start asking. If you're not willing to pay $1 million for a quarterback, and Miami's willing to pay 10, can you be mad when you don't get the same results? And that's something that I think has kind of started to become a stark reality here. But again, when we talk about going back to our first point, when you don't invoke any excitement among the fans, when you don't produce on the field, it's hard to raise more NIL money to be able to jump into those bigger shark-infested waters when you don't have the excitement, enthusiasm within the program. But, you know, man, just hearing the conversation around that and how they decided not to spend on a quarterback, and, you know, we're talking about $2 to $2.5 million, I think that might be a kind of a wake-up call that we have to kind of realize that, man, we're spending, but we're not spending like a lot of these other top-tier programs are spending, just at least right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think the thing you have to understand is there's a difference between NIL and rev share, right? So rev share is the amount of money that the schools are required to pay out to the athletic department athletes, right? So this past year, it was $20.5 million. Okay. This upcoming year, I think it's supposed to be 21.7 or something like that million dollars. It's been reported, whether or not it's been confirmed or not, but it's been reported by multiple outlets that Florida State is spending about 90-ish percent of that rev share on football players, where everybody else is getting very small. Okay, so 90-ish percent. So if you do the math, that's what, $18, $19 million that's going to football, and you're paying 105, probably a little bit less, maybe 100 players, you know, in rev share. And then you have NIL. So when a football team says they have, when LSU says they have a $45 million budget, what they're saying is we have, you know, $18 million in rev share, and then we have another $23, $24 million in NIL, right?
Yeah.
So when Jesse says that, when we say here at Plant the Sphere that we think that Florida State might not be doing as well at NIL, what we're talking about is not rev share. We're talking about the money that gets donated to the school. Now, you can use a lot of different things for NIL. We're seeing a lot of programs use their marketing, their media market partners like Nike and Reebok, mm-hmm. and to transition some of that money that would have just gone to the school for their deal. Now they're transitioning to players, right? Well, Florida State for the longest time and Michael Alford have been believing that, oh, there's going to be this salary cap and the government's going to step in. Well, it didn't happen. Right? As Stone Cold would say, it didn't happen. DTA, don't trust anybody. And so now all these other programs have been spending the money over the rev share salary cap, and you've been holding on. So you've been pushing away entities like, you know, the Battles Inn and Rising Spirit and all that stuff. And you've not done a great job at creating better sugar for the fans to really want to get in there. So yeah, it's no wonder that you tell everybody you're going to go after a $2.5 million quarterback, and then you settle with something that's sub $800,000. And you've done this 3 years straight. When you were at the precipice when the whole NIL game came out, you're one of the leading schools and programs that were doing this. And now we you got Miami. Yes, they got big boosters, all like that stuff. But you got Miami. You got dadgummit Duke, who you're probably spending way more money totality in football than they will ever will. And they're outspending you for a quarterback. They spent $4 million on Mansa. $4 million.
Yeah.
And you get an $800,000 messed up leg, can't even hit the side of a brick with a touchdown pass. Guy won't even throw over his offensive line, won't even run.
And then you wonder why Duke, that program, just won an ACC title while you finished 15th in the conference.
Exactly. And now, granted, they snuck into the ACC title, but still, they were in the position to sneak into the ACC title.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a huge part of it. And then the other thing before I throw it back to you is this. Because, you know, Jesse knows that I'm a I went to college in Kentucky, even though I'm a Florida State fan. I'm a Kentucky basketball fan. So I follow a lot of their stuff or whatever. And in their football program, they just hired Will Stein, who's the offensive coordinator from Oregon. And so when his opening press conference, he talked about the strategy of what we're going to do is we're going to put all our money into studs, or what he would call star players. And then we're going to supplement around them. Right. So what he believes are studs are obviously from the offense, defensive line, and just some of the really, really good players. And then everything else is going to be supplemented. So they have levels of what they're willing to pay for each position. And those stud positions, they're willing to pay a top dollar. And then everything else, they're willing to pay a certain dollar. So I understand this philosophy when John Garrett talked about this, of how every, you know, position kind of has a dollar amount assigned to it for sure. But dadgummit, you have got to up that quarterback dollar amount.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You just have to. We cannot keep getting away with paying very little for quarterbacks and then expect – what's the saying about insanity?
Oh, yeah, doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. Yep.
It's just not going to work, guys. We've seen it 2 years in a row that paying very little for a quarterback is not going to work. Now, I get it. You had to dip a lot of money into the Desir twins. You're paying the suck tax, as other people have called it, right? You're paying the suck tax of just sucking. You've had to renegotiate all those things. But man,
you got to look at your philosophy and say, if we want to win, and we all know that the three most important things, and we talk about this all the time, your offensive, defensive line, and then your quarterback. We've got to pay top dollar for that.
Yeah. Do you need six running backs on the roster?
Do you need 12 tight ends? What
right. Do you need the eighth cornerback instead of maybe spending $1.5 million on a quarterback instead of maybe going out and getting more than two defensive linemen in the portal? So, yeah, I think you're right, man, in the fact that you just have to revisit. If you're going to cheap out on a position, don't let it be the most important position, quarterback. Because, again, like, I hate to keep going back to the Miami example, but you look at Cam Ward. Like, they paid up for Cam Ward. And if it wasn't for him, that team would have been probably 6-6 that year that they won the 10 games. And even Carson Beck, like, I understand he wasn't necessarily Cam Ward, but he was good enough that he got them, led them to a national championship because they paid. And now Mensah's probably going to do the same thing because they're willing to pay. And I'm not saying that you got to spend $10 million or $3 million or whatever that, you know, because it's crazy how you went from $3 million with Cam Ward or whatever it was, a 10 already. But like you said, you just can't go do the same thing over and over expecting different results and keep getting these bargain bin quarterbacks.
Yep.
And so it's just something that I think raises a little bit of a red flag. But again, I think it's a product of your environment. It's what you've done to yourself because, you know, when Lane Kiffin, you had the excitement, the new coach, he's coming in, he's doing all this stuff. A lot of the reason he went to LSU is because the promises in NIL money. We're going to give you $25 million or whatever it was a year in NIL money on top of rev share. Well, right now you're trying to squeeze juice out of a pretty rotten orange right now that you're trying to get every dollar you can out of. So you can't guarantee $25 a year in NIL probably right now to Mike Norvell because no one trusts him to use the money. And so that's why, again, when you continuously lock things down and you don't win, it's just a product of where you're at. And it's unfortunate, but it seems like the way that they're trying to get out of the unfortunate times is by doing the same things they did to get into the unfortunate times. And I just don't see how that's going to work. And so I agree, man. I think going forward, especially I understand at the time when you took him, maybe you didn't need a big expensive quarterback to go in Gus Malzahn's offense. But, you know, Mike Norvell said in the press conference that I'm always one step ahead. I always know what's coming. So you probably should have had a good inclination that Gus Malzahn was going to retire and maybe he wasn't the best guy to take in case you're going to end up falling back on your offense. So
exactly.
Either one was true or one was not, right? And so it's a tough thing, man, because, again, I don't know that I would love to see Florida State spending $10 million on a quarterback, but when you're looking at what the difference it makes at certain programs around the country and you're kind of moneyballing it and getting the results that you're getting, it's frustrating. And we're going to talk about ACC quarterback rankings coming up in another episode where we're going to kind of rehash this topic. So, man, yeah, that was, I think, another one of the big takeaways I got out of the other takeaway there. But the one other one that I had here while we're sticking with the offense, but I think things were pretty bad last year. Like I think that Mike Norvell was smiling through his teeth and biting his tongue the whole time because I think there was trouble in paradise when you talk about last year. Now, obviously, when he's asked about Gus Malzahn, like he's not just going to get up there and dog Gus because one, that's his mentor, and two, he hired Gus. He had to sell Gus at one time. I have the best offensive coordinator in the country is what he said last year. You can't dog him and then also endorse him at the same time. So I think he's going to use the kid gloves, but I think when it was asked a couple of times and he really kind of started to let a few things slip, I think you could really tell that he was not happy with a lot of aspects last year in the way that offense was handled. I mean, he talked about adding different things to the offense. He made sure to specify that they're different. He said the running back rotation was not by desire.
That
was a big one too. And so not only did it feel like he wasn't happy with it, it also felt like his hands were pretty tied as the head coach, which had to piss him off even more, that there's things that you don't like and you don't even really have the authority to change on your own program. And so what I'm hoping is he learned from that. He was able to learn that, okay, I saw the things that worked. I saw the things that didn't. We're going to take a different approach in those things this year. But that was a big one, man. That was a really big takeaway from that is that I think Mike really was sour on that Gus Malzahn situation last year.
Can I just be real with you, Jesse?
Go for it, man.
This is why he shouldn't be the coach at Florida State.
Yeah.
Because how are you going to let some dude that couldn't make it as a head coach, literally bailed on UCF, right? Literally bailed on UCF come be your offensive coordinator, and then basically let him redesign your program. The reason why they shut down media access to practice was because of Gus Malzahn. The reason why they moved practice from the afternoon to the morning was because of Gus Malzahn. The reason why the running backs, Kroma would get in there for four carries for 40 yards and then not see him again for the rest of the game. And then Salchuk and then Singleton and then whoever else. And then the guy that was doing the beer in the stands, he's running a couple of routes as well too, was because of Gus Malzahn. The reason why people showed up to play your game and knew when the reverse pass was coming and that you only had three pass plays, a deep shot, a shot to the sidelines, and a shot to the ground, was because of Gus Malzahn. How are you going to let that dude walk into your program and dictate how it gets run? And then when you wanted to fire him, because we all know he wanted to get him out of there, you couldn't. And it took him bailing on you to save you. This is why you shouldn't be the head coach at Florida State. My point made. Anyways.
Yeah, what big-time dominant head coach would have that type of situation? And I'm not saying that Mike Norvell is. Right. I'm not saying that Mike Norvell is a big time dominant head coach, but do you think Kirby Smart would be okay with that? No. Dan Lanning would be okay with that. Kurt Spaghetti would be okay.
Fired like, that dude in a heartbeat.
Exactly. But it's like the saying goes, beggars can't be choosers. And right now he didn't have a choice. The choice was out of his hands.
Yeah, that's so true. And so, you know, what he said in the I forgot about that running back quote. But the quote that stuck out to me that made me think the same thing was when he said, you know, our offensive base is the same, but we're different. We're going to add a little bit more things that give a little bit more different, unique looks to the offense. I thought, yeah, because you're going to run some routes, actually, not nine routes. You're not just going to run go routes anymore. That was a slight little shift.
There was a few jabs in there for sure.
Jabs for sure.
Yeah, and it was funny because even when Gus retired, you know, there was no FSU picture on that graphic, on that retirement graphic. So I think it just goes to show you how poorly things were.
Yep.
And, you know, at the end of the day, man, that has to cause some dysfunction within the offensive staff, I'm sure. So hopefully at least there's a little bit more cohesiveness and things like that between everybody this year. But it was something that definitely stuck out. Like, you could get the vibe. He wouldn't openly trash Gus, but it definitely came across that he was not happy with that situation last year. And so hopefully he's reinvigorated this year and kind of knows what he wants to do. And you know, again, because like we said before, I think he's a better play caller than Gus is. And so hopefully he gets his mojo back there. But man, a couple more quick points before we move on from this is one of the other ones that stood out from a defensive standpoint was a lot to do with the year two bump. Now, we talked about this before where we were like, it's hard to gauge a year two bump whenever you have so many new pieces coming into a defense, because it's still year one for a lot of these guys in the new system. But I think I had looked it up on the defense, and Florida State has on that side of the ball, I think 9 guys coming back that were played at least 200 snaps last year. You got a lot of guys who have experience that started a lot of games in this defense. And even then, even if it wasn't on field experience, it was practice experience, knowing the system, knowing the calls. And so, you know, one of the things they said is things that they were just now starting to do in the summer, they're able to do in the spring. And so I do believe that to a degree, because there are going to be new pieces in this defense, that it will be year one for them. I said this too in the defensive episode that we talked about, where I thought that you would see them get a little bit better based on being year two of the system. Because, you know, again, when it's year one, the coaches are learning how to coach with the other coaches. The players are learning how to read the coaches. The coaches are learning how to read the players and what kind of coaching they respond to. And nobody knows the system well. And so it was a stark change of a system from the 4-2-5 to the 3-3-5. So I do think that year two bump will play a little bit of factor in the defense being better. But definitely that was something that came across from Tony White, from a lot of the guys, from Terrence Knight, and a lot of the guys that talked about it. It did come through as in year two should help them get better. Guys are moving better. Guys know what to do. They know where to be in a lot more instances than they did last year. And so that does give me some encouragement. That is something that I had kind of counted on going into from year one to year two. And they've talked about it a lot too.
Yeah, I do appreciate that. Like, when you look at the stats, you see that typically in Tony White's defense, they do get better year two. Having the 9 guys that came back with over 200 plus snaps, starts, whatever, practices, will be super helpful. You know, again, we've talked about the depth of the defensive line. We're worried about that. We're worried about, you know, how some of these linebackers are going to shape out. Blue Adams, you know, the new secondary coach there, he talked about a little bit about that as well, too, about how he feels like they're going to take a next step in this evolution of the defense, which is interesting because he also talked about how the fact he was learning this defense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, maybe shouldn't have said that, brother. Maybe should have just kind of left that alone.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought that was interesting. But, yeah, I feel like they'll take that next step. I'm sure there'll be some headaches there, but hopefully they're able to work those headaches out in dominant fashion against, like, you know, New Mexico and all like that stuff. I'm excited to see how this defense gets that much better. My biggest thing is, do they trigger faster? That's the biggest thing. Can they trigger faster? If they can trigger faster, then I do think you'll see a step up in those stats for the next year.
Yeah, and a couple other things that I wanted to touch on real quick and circling back to the offense was Tim Harris Jr., a couple of the comments that he made that I think will help is, you know, I'm kind of almost sitting here thinking, Michael, right? Like, I'm kind of thinking that with the way things played out with Gus and all them, that I don't know, maybe Gus was just a little bit of a control guy, right? Mm-hmm. He just didn't like to relinquish control. And it kind of almost sounds like Tim Harris Jr. might be excited to get out from under him a little bit as well. Like mm-hmm. he said, you know, there's some different formations that I've been wanting to try and mm-hmm. install that Mike's open to, because that was really his specialty as an offensive coordinator when he was there at UCF for a little bit. And so he says he's got some things that are exciting. You know, he's basically just in charge of running the day-to-day game planning and practicing, putting together their practices and stuff like that. And so I think he's going to have some things to input on this offense as well, where it feels like maybe last year it was definitely just kind of Gus's offense and everybody just kind of followed suit. So I do think a mixing of the minds is not ever a bad thing. And then one of the other things that I wanted to touch on here was Herb Hand and his talking about the offensive line unit, because I love Herb Hand, first off. Yeah. Like, he's just a guy's guy. He's a football guy. You know, he talked about one of his comparisons was talking about how football players, everyone wants them to be like a microwave product right now, where it's got to be ready right now, but it's more like a, you know, putting it on a smoker and getting it. And that's my guy, right? Because I'm a barbecue aficionado here as well. But I think when you talk about this group, man, the one thing that stood out with him was a lot of the versatility and a lot of the experience that they brought in. And I think that's going to play a lot of be vital for them over the course of the season, that you got guys who can play different positions. I think your tackles will probably be a little bit more locked down with the Xavier Chaplin and the Chimdia guy that came in. But I think on the interior, you're going to have some guys that can contribute there. And honestly, I'm starting to open up to now where I think you're going to see some more Florida State guys start in this rather than transfers. Like, I think Andre Otto is a guy that's got a real chance to start.
Yeah.
I think Sam Ann Thompson's a guy that could play in at center there, that you may see Braden Joyner kick out to guard or something like that. So I think what I took from that is I'm a little bit more encouraged about some of the pieces, the homegrown pieces we have in the offensive line room, which, if nothing else, it gives you more competitive depth with the transfers that you brought in. So it might not be – it'll be five new faces, but it might not be five transfers out there. And that's one of the things that I got from Herb Hand.
Yeah, I really did it. I love that part because he did spend – he did spend a unique amount of time talking about Andre Otto. I did catch that, and I thought, he's really trying to hype him up to get him to believe in himself, or he might have found something. It would be so nice, Jesse, that we could have some actually high school recruited offensive linemen end up in the starting rotation, or just in the starting, you know, lineup. That'd be so nice, because what that does and that sells to other high school recruits, hey, we're not just going to recruit you and then transfer portal over you. We're actually going to recruit you and develop you. We might transfer portal your first year because you ain't ready, but that second or third year, it's going to be your spot to lose. Like, that would be so nice to be able to sell that message, because we all know that the best offensive lines, the best, they might have one, maybe two transfers, but the predominance of them are built from your own stable of recruiting, right? That offensive defensive line is built from recruiting.
Yeah, not only recruiting, but guys who have been developed in the system, who have gotten snaps throughout the course of the season, and then, you know, they've got 300-400 snaps by the time they're ready in year three. You're not pulling things out of the microwave. You're getting them off the smoker.
Exactly.
But right now, every time we check the lid, the smoker's empty. So we need, it'd be nice to pull some off of that.
And
so,
we're burning stuff in the microwave.
Right, exactly. And so, but that's pretty much it. The only other thing I have here to talk about from the coaches' interviews are, the last thing I want to talk about is just Deuce's impact. And that's one thing that I definitely think came through It's just, man, having a guy of that caliber, a guy who would have been playing on Sundays had he went to the draft, a guy who probably could have went to any team in the country had he re-entered the portal. The fact that he's a legacy, the fact that he does see, and I know he got paid handsomely to come back. I'm well aware of that. But it does mean a little bit more to him, I think. And to hear some of the things that Mike Norvell says about how, like, he's a guy that, you know, if he sees a guy messing up in camp or a young guy who's doing the wrong thing, he'll stop practice. And sometimes, man, again, we've talked about this 100 times before. The best teams in the country are player-led, coach-pushed, not the other way around. And so, man, just having a leader is something that we talked about in 24 where that team felt like it was leaderless. And then last year you had Tommy, but, you know, when you're not playing super well, it's kind of hard to follow that leadership. But Deuce is a guy who's proven it on the field. He's done it on the field. So, therefore, like, you know, like Mike talked about, when you see a guy like that, or maybe this was Tim Harris, the wide receivers coach, like when you see the young guys come in and they're like, I want to be like Deuce. I want to do the things that he does. So you're leading by example. Man, I think having that voice in the locker room in a time where you need a voice like that in the locker room, man, that's huge. And so I just can't understate the importance of what it meant for Deuce Robinson to come back to this program this year.
Yeah, and I hope that by his coming back, and that inspires just so much more effort, so much more willingness to not give up, to keep fighting even when it may get tough. Man, I'd love to send him out, you know, with 8-9 wins, you know.
Yeah.
Potentially a playoff berth. Like, I'd love – he feels like the kind of player that deserves it. Our first 1,000-yard receiver in quite some time since, I think, Scary Terry, I believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'd just be so nice to leverage his skill set to get this offense back to its elite scoring ability. But, yeah, he does bring a lot of leadership to that. Now we'll see if that translates again. Because I love how in this season they talk about leadership. Oh, that's our great leadership guy. And then you see it in the season and you're like, where's that leadership at? Right?
Yeah.
So hopefully it translates. But, yeah, I'm so grateful that Deuce came back this year.
Yeah, I mean, again, it doesn't matter what you say in a microphone. It matters what you do on Saturdays. But now, talking in the microphone is about all we have to talk about.
Talking season, yeah.
But – with that being said, a couple other quick little notes just to close football out. Jordan Sanders and Isaiah Williams are both going to be limited throughout the course of camp. Of course, Jordan Sanders was the Texas State transfer, which is unfortunate because they talked a lot about him being that extra big body on the interior of the defensive line, a position that we know is already thin, so you'd like to see all hands on deck. But from what I understand, he will be good to go by summer. He'll be back. It happened during workout, so he'll be good to go. Isaiah Williams, highly touted freshman running back, linebacker, is coming off an ACL. Said he's able to run, move, pivot, do all that good stuff, but they're just being precautionary through spring camp, and he should be back by the fall as well. So just a couple of news and notes there to touch up on. But, guys, if you're enjoying this episode, before we move on to some baseball and basketball talk here to close out the show, drop a like and subscribe on the YouTube channel. Help support us by reaching other Noles fans with the content. Look, it's free to do. It doesn't sign you up for anything, and it really, really helps the channel out. We have a lot of exciting stuff coming up that I can't wait to tell you guys about. We got a lot of stuff in the works that's just taking some time to get rolled out that I can't wait to share with you guys. So now is a great time as any to jump on with us here at Plant the Spear. We're really trying to take this thing to the next level. And like I said, we got a couple things in the works that I think are going to do that you guys are going to want to be a part of.
Yep.
So definitely make sure to lock in with us now. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noles fans as well. So, Michael, let's talk about some sports that are winning right now because they have earned the right to be talked about. And we will start. Let's start with basketball. They just wrapped up the regular season finale with a dominating win over SMU, which was nice to see because that was one of those over that stretch. That was one of the games that they lost, one of their three losses, and it was a close loss. Now, I know SMU had been slipping. They had lost their last three games. This was their fourth loss in a row, but this was one of those games you just wanted to see Florida State win, right? You wanted to see them. They've had a couple quick, you know, scares here lately. They let the Virginia game go. They let Pitt come back and almost lost that game. This is just one where you were like, I could just see this being a letdown game. But no, Florida State comes out and they make a statement in this one. And, I mean, dominate from start to finish. And so it was really nice to see. They've won 10 of the last 13 games. They are 17-14 on the season, 10-8 overall in ACC play. So really they finished on a high note. The unfortunate part of this is that, you know, they started off with a pretty rough patch. So it's going to limit what their future ceiling can be as far as tournament talk and all that stuff goes. Now, of course, they're going to be in the ACC tournament. next week. But again, man, this is a program. This is a team that was predicted to finish dead last in the ACC. They go on this crazy late season run. You know, you got, I mean, Robert McRae has been hot. You got Chauncey Wiggins puts up 31 against SMU. I know the announcers talked a lot about, look, man, there's probably not a team I'd want to play less than Florida State right now. And so just seeing the turnaround that they made, it sucks that the beginning of the season will limit what you could probably, you know, this team getting a chance to maybe go on a run in a tournament at a time that they're playing really hot. But again, to win 10 of your last 13, to get to 10-8 in the ACC play and clinch that eighth seed in the ACC tournament. I mean, again, this is, you are over delivering on the expectations that were put on you prior to the season when, you know, you're talking about a coaching change that happened kind of late in the cycle. You had to throw together a team out of the portal. You don't really, obviously we know in the ACC playing at a football school, you don't have the greatest resources to build with here, but to see the way they finished the season, man, it's been really, really incredible. It's unfortunate that they do lose a lot. I mean, obviously you're going to lose big names like Robert McRae, Kobe McGee, Chauncey Wiggins, LeJay Jones, and Alex Steen. But you also return a lot of young guys that got a significant minutes this year, like A.J. Swinton, Bassong, Cam Miles, Summersville. And you also have the top 10 class. You have the number 8 class coming in from the high school ranks with 3 top 100 kids. So the thing is, ending on this high note just kind of shows you the vision that Luke Laux has for this program. And once things get going and they get some real talent in here and they get some time to get their systems implemented, man, again, this thing could really get rolling. I mean, it's unfortunate that you had, like I said, the rough December. And I would say, you know, if you can go beat Cal in the ACC tournament, I think you're pretty much, you're happy with how the season ended, right? You're disappointed with the beginning. You're happy with the end. But really, when you talk about the basketball team, like if you could flip the UMass and the Dayton losses, which are your kind of your really ugly losses there in December, if you could flip those to wins and not have the meltdown against UVA where you pick up that ranked win late, you're 20-11. You're on the probably on the bubble for the tournament. And I think you feel pretty darn good about where you're at with this basketball team. So, man, I'm going to kick it to you to give me some thoughts. But overall, this team, you just can't be anything but impressed with the way that they finished the season, going from the turnaround that they did. And even when you look at the games they lost, I mean, you're talking about Virginia, you're talking about Miami, you're talking about good teams were the ones that they lost to. And so to finish in the top half of the ACC when you were projected to be dead last, man, I mean, it's exciting stuff. And you can see the excitement for this team, this program going forward under Luke Laux, a young, energetic head coach. Man, if he gets this class in here, this top 10 class, and he does, you know, a couple little things in the portal this offseason, you know, we were talking about this before the show. Like, I know it's expectations for Florida State basketball aren't really high. Mm-mm. And Luke Laux said, I don't want to have that, right? I don't want to just accept that mediocre is okay because we're a football school. But, I mean, this is a team that you're going to start expecting to make the tournament if they keep playing like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's weird because you don't like moral victories, right? You don't like moral victories. We're not a moral victory school. Man, I was going to make a joke about Miami, but it's so hard to not. You can't do it anymore. It's so frustrating. Anyways, it's not a moral victory school. So they really shot themselves in the foot, like you said. They went 7-11 in their first 18 games, and you had embarrassing losses, obviously to UMass and the other one I can't think of right now, Dayton, where you shouldn't have lost those games, right? And you got blown out. You allowed NC State to come in here and put up 100-something points on you on your home floor. You know,
Georgia there was the same thing.
Yeah, Georgia did the same thing, and you just kind of look at yourself like, I don't know. But then you also saw glimpses of it during that 18-game stretch where they played Florida really well. Florida looks like, you know, probably one of the best teams in the country right now on the way to winning another back-to-back national championship. My gosh. You know, and so you look at
and
that.
And Duke. You played Duke tough too.
You played Duke tough. Yes, you did. And then in the last 13 games, you go 10-3, right? You go 10-3. You lose a heartbreaker to SMU on their home floor, but you get them back. Obviously, you blow them out on your home floor. You lose a heartbreaker to Virginia where you had the win locked up, basically. And then you let Miami come in, and you're playing them tough. And then Miami got better over the season, but you only lose, I think, by 10. But really, that game was close pretty much most of the game there. So you think if you could take two, that Virginia win and that Miami win, you're not only in the tournament, you're not worried about the bubble. You're like probably a 8, 9, 10 seed somewhere, right? And what a great opportunity that would have been. But here's the thing, though, Jesse. They still have a chance. Now, it's highly improbable.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If they win Wednesday against Cal, they'll face Duke. And they play Duke really close. I'm not saying they're going to do it, but I'm not saying they ain't going to do it. And you're going to be at the ACC tournament this year. Kudos to you. I'm so jealous of you. So maybe that Jesse magic will get them past Cal. Then maybe you'll show up and they'll get past Duke. And maybe they might make a run and just win the whole daggum thing. Why not?
Yeah, I would love that. And look, Luke Laux said, I get it, man, but I'm not putting it out of the reach of this team to win an ACC championship. And it's improbable. I get it. You got that monster kind of Duke sitting there where maybe your seeding wasn't the most fortunate you can beat Cal. You already beat him once this season. Yep. And then you go and you got to play Duke. But hey, look, man, if you go in and slay the giant right out of the gate, one, that opens up as a statement. And then the path gets a little bit easier because you've already eliminated them. So,
and how about this? No one projected a 7-5 Duke football team to make it to the ACC championship, but because of all the wonky tiebreakers, they got in and won it.
Exactly. You never know what can happen. So, yeah, I mean, start with getting the win on Wednesday night over Cal, and if you get that, you feel pretty good, and then at least go play Duke tough, right? Yep. If you upset them, great. You know, if not, you at least be competitive in that. But you are right. I want to make a point on that. I am going to be at that game, at least on Wednesday night. If we win and advance to play Duke on Thursday night, I will more than likely be going back for that as well. So it is going to be at the Spectrum Center there in Charlotte, North Carolina. You guys know that's in my neck of the woods. So I am going to travel up for that game Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Florida State tips off against Cal. If you're going to be there, drop a comment on YouTube. Follow us on social media or whatever the case may be. I'll be there. Come find me. Come hang out. We'll chop it up. We'll talk Noles, all that good stuff. I would love to meet up with any of you guys that are going to be in Charlotte for the tournament. So that would be really, really fun, man. Looking forward to that. Really excited to get to see these guys play. Now, Michael, the last thing I want to talk about here is some baseball talk. Florida State gets the series clinching win today over the sweeping win over Northern Kentucky. They are now 12-2 on the season, won 9 straight, clinched 2 straight series where they swept both teams. Here's the thing, man. This team's starting to look better, right? They're in Arlington. That was pretty scary. That was a red flag wake-up call. Florida State looked just basically got embarrassed by Nebraska, did not look good against Auburn. There were a lot of question marks that were raised about that team. Now, the teams that you've played since then have not been the caliber of Auburn and Nebraska. So there's still the question of how do you do this against the better competition coming up. But the big thing for me, Michael, is right now the offense has shown up. Like, they showed up huge this weekend. We put together a 13-run inning, like a 10-run inning. The bats are really starting to step up. You got some freshmen that are really starting to look good in Paulino Jr. And Will Bravaro. Like, you've got some guys who are stepping up throughout this lineup. Now, there's still some guys that are struggling, but you're starting to see the bats pick up more consistently, which has really been the biggest concern for this team. It's just the offense has kind of been MIA. Consider the caliber of pitching, but I also want to come back to, yeah, it's going to be different when you step into a tougher competition level with what you have coming up through ACC play. But, man, baseball is a crazy sport. Like, you still have to come and lace it up and be ready to play every single game because, I mean, we're talking about LSU cannot find a win no matter who that they might be playing Louisiana High School and still lose right now. And the number 2 team in the country cannot buy a win right now. They are struggling. And then you look at Florida, the next team that you have coming up. They just lost the series to – they might have even got swept by the time we're recording this. They lost the series to High Point.
Yep.
Whatever a High Point is.
What is a High Point?
The High Point is the low point of the season for Florida. So that's about all that is. So, you know, the thing is when you see the improvement for the baseball team, it is exciting and it is good, but you also have to see them back that up against the better competition that's coming. Now, the other thing that I will say about baseball here is the pitching does start to seem like guys are settling in, right? Wes looks great. I really have no doubts about Wes. Obviously, the more reps he gets, the better he'll get, but he's looking like your bona fide Friday starter. Johnny Abraham out of the pen has been excellent for you. Kevin Meebles, you're starting to get these guys, right? Chris Kinnear, these guys that are coming out of there. Trey Beard has looked good on Saturdays now that he's healthy again. We know that he got sick and lost some weight and stuff like that. And then Bryson Moore starting to have better and better performances. So it feels like you're stabilizing the ship. It's just, again, starting this week, this coming up week, you have a series at Florida. You go to Gainesville, and regardless of how they're playing, there's a lot of talent on that baseball team.
Right.
Then you go all the way. You go to Wake Forest on the weekend. They're number 15 according to D1 Baseball. They're 15-1 on the season, 11-0 at home. Now, granted, they haven't really played many tough teams yet, but that's a pretty darn good baseball program they got up there in Winston-Salem. So you're going to have to bring it, man. This is going to be another really big test. And what concerns me is just the fact that the last time you faced a Power Four team, you kind of got embarrassed.
Yes, you
and
did.
Now you're about to face a couple of, or at least one, really good Power Four team coming up on the weekend in Wake Forest. So I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing from the offense. I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing by the pitching starting to settle in a little bit. But really, this week is going to be big for Florida State because you got the test early in Arlington. I think it's pretty easy to say the Michigan game looked good, but you failed the other two tests.
Yep.
You bounced back against a bunch of teams that you should have beat willingly. Right. Now it's time to do it again. Now it's like the test number two, right? That was the middle
pretest. Yeah.
That's the pretest. Now comes the real test. And this week's going to show you a lot about this baseball team because you've had time to get things in order. And I'm not saying, you know, they're number 15, they're 15-1 on the season. I'm not saying you got to go up there and sweep Wake. But you need to get the series, or you at least need to win one game and be competitive, right? You cannot go up there and get swept, or all the red flags that we saw in Arlington are going to be back in our mind. But it's looking better. Now it's time to see it against better competition.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. I thought, you know, look, they handled their business against the teams they should have handled their business on. They showed up. You know, the pitching got better. The bats finally started to wake up. You're seeing them have better defensive fielding performance out on the field there. I think Link is managing the – because Mike – don't put Mike Norvell behind that baseball
Please,
team.
No, don't do that.
But – you see Link starting to really get a feel for when he should make changes, who he should leverage. And I like where they're going, but I totally agree with you. You're supposed to do that against those teams.
Yeah.
What do you do with Florida? What do you do with Wake? How do you show up there? The real test now begins. And if this team wants to make a serious, serious run to Omaha this year, you've got to beat teams like this. And I'll just take it one step further, Jesse. You can't just go and get one victory. You need to go win the series.
Yeah.
Point blank, simple.
Yeah, I agree. Because, I mean, I'm just looking at D1 rankings right now, and, like, you still have some really tough teams on the schedule. I mean, you still got NC State, who's 13. You still got Clemson, who's 14. You still got Wake Forest, who's 15. Georgia Tech, who's number 5. So, like, Miami, who's number 24. You have a lot of tough tests on the schedule. Yep. And so, again – it's looked really good against, and you're fortunate to be 12-2, right? You're fortunate to be where you're at because, again, LSU is struggling. Tennessee lost a series to Kent State. Like, there's a lot of really good baseball teams that are struggling right now.
That's right.
But, and so you're in the position that you're in, but it's just, we need to see it against better competition.
Right.
And it's gonna ramp up really, really fast coming into this week. So lots of exciting stuff. Again, like we've always said, man, we trust them until they give us a reason not to. And right now I trust Link Jarrett. So hopefully they're going to go ahead and hit that midseason form and get this thing rolling. But it will be exciting to see. That's going to be a big series up there in Winston-Salem. But that's going to do it for us, guys. We made sure to touch on some football, some baseball, some basketball. Softball just swept Coastal Carolina. So congratulations to them. I got another big showdown against Texas Tech coming up in the next week or so around March 18th. We were talking about that before the show. So hopefully those ladies can maybe get some revenge on Texas Tech there. But lots of exciting stuff going on right now, man. I hate that camp's going to be kind of closed, so it's going to limit a little bit of what we have to talk about. But, you know we're going to find something to talk about for you guys. We'll get you some content out. So, again, we appreciate y'all rocking with us. Drop a like and subscribe if you enjoy this content. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noel fans. Also, check out our website at plantthespear.com. I've actually been writing some articles here lately, and we've been making some changes and stuff. So you guys definitely feel free to check that out. But until the next one, Michael, we appreciate everybody watching, and we'll see you on the other side. As always,
go Noles.
Mike Norvell put the clamp on camps. I knew I was going to screw it up. So I was, okay. Mike Norvell put the clamp on camp. Mike Norvell put the clamp on camp. I just had to make sure it sounded right. It sounds. I can't look at you right now. I'm gonna laugh.
I can hear you laughing.
Oh, take five.
Take five. Okay.